Welcome to Everyday Entrepreneurs Everywhere with your host, Chris Parker.
And we are back with Everyday Entrepreneurs Everywhere. This is Chris Parker, and today I have a goldfish author, meaning Rosaria Jirilo Lauman, who's also here in the Netherlands with me, although I believe she's originally from somewhere else, and we'll talk about that whole origin story during the conversation. She's the author of The Yellow Goldfish, and there's a new version out as well that we'll talk about, which has been updated. So, and I also want to highlight that she's also an artist, and I would even state as a poet. And so I've also been able to appreciate one of her books, the Words of Wisdom, Nurturing Our World. And I'll put links to all this in the show notes. So Rosaria, thank you so much for joining. It's delightful to have you here. Can you please share with us, what is it that you do and why do you do what you do?
Good morning, Christian. Thank you so much for having me in for this podcast, bringing together entrepreneurs really from everywhere. And thank you for the artist. Like I have to say, that one is still something that I find difficult to recognize myself in or like to attribute it. What is it I do and why do I do it? So first of why, for me, it's really about bringing more happiness into the world. And art is actually part of that as well. So are the books. And what is that I do? So it's really a combination. Ever since I started as a freelance 7 years ago, after 12 plus years in corporate, it was about helping companies through advisory and through also analysis to really understand better their customers and apply new ways of fulfilling customer experience and creating wow customer experience and happiness contributing. So I've been doing with a mix of advisory, but also, like I say, my energy and so inspiration. The booklet, artistic booklet, have also been an extra for me that started as a gift to the customers and that to my customers, and now it became published. And then I write as well. So I love to write as well. That's a way for me to bring down my thoughts and to put them out there in the world.
And can you go a little deeper? Like why have you, I guess, really dedicated yourself to, I guess, the pursuit of happiness in this way? What is it that originally triggered you to focus and go down that path?
So I guess that really started, you could say, my childhood. So I'm originally Italian, and I'm from the south of Italy. So from a small town called Caserta, which very few people outside Italy have heard of, but it's just 20 kilometers from Naples. And I studied, basically I had a very classical education. My father was a teacher, Latin and Greek teacher. So I studied a lot of philosophy, and I was completely passionate about philosophy and the psychological element into it. But as I was studying philosophy, there was always this continuous change of also how various philosophers saw happiness. And while it was clear that all of them were searching happiness and they were looking at it in a different way, for me, the striking contrast was with the reality I was living in, which was like, even though everybody has this idea of the south of Italy, like happy people, it was like a cloudy happiness. It was like, I say it was as if people had put a cap on that happiness. This is what we can be, but we cannot get here. And I was like, I didn't get it. I was like, why? If all we want in life, our purpose is happiness, why do we see life as sacrifice? There was this huge concept in my childhood of life is sacrifice. It's about work. And I mean, my parents were after war children. So like they were really working from 7 o'clock in the morning to 7 o'clock in the evening. And I would only see them for dinner. And I just didn't get it. And because philosophy could not really quite explain it for me, I chose to look at it through the lens of economics. So I moved out of Caserta and I went to Rome to study business economics. And that's where I also started to get very passionate about customer experience, where customer experience wasn't even yet a thing in 2002. I came to the Netherlands back then for an internship at Forrester Research, where customer experience was just maturing as a concept. Mm-hmm. And then it went on from there. So I then became, I wrote my master thesis on customer experience. I became a specialist, and my customer experience has been my field for the past 18 years. But even there, for me, there was always, it's not just about customer experience. It's about what can we achieve through customer experience? How can we make the world better, happier, and healthier, and more sustainable, and even more peaceful? Because at the end, we make the world we live in. And that's for me also. So the companies, I think they have a role, a responsibility in make that world as better as it can possibly be, and not putting that cap. So yeah, that is, I guess, it's the connecting line to my entire life, from my childhood to life in Caserta to now what companies do. It's like, why are we putting a cap? Why can we not go for the top, what Maslow used to call to the growing tips statistic? Like, if we just look at the average, we stay average. If we just look for the middle way, it's like, what's the fun in that? And why?
And I know that you're very busy. So there are organizations and leaders who this resonates with. And I'm curious, for me, it feels a little bit more the exception than the rule. I mean, you know, because they're, you know, oftentimes I hear from people say, well, you're here to work, not make friends. You know, that type of stuff is, and like, well, actually, no, I'm here to, you know, interact with humans and do cool shit and create value. And that means they would be friends. You know? So it's, you know, how do you see, I guess, in the industry, the evolution of this? Is this something that is starting to pick up and shift, that there's more awareness that people can succeed through a pursuit of happiness rather than sacrifice?
Absolutely. I mean, and I really see it's been picking up a lot in the past few years. I also have to say it's been a learning journey for me as well. So also, just as you were mentioning now, I see people, I was like, oh, what do you mean you're going to go and talk to people? I used to be one of those leaders. So I was like, I think my key learning point that I will never forget, it was when I was at Philips. So I was responsible for the after sales of the customer experience shop. And I was also like working and sure connecting to the people in my office, but not much. And then I hired an external consultant, Marianne van der Dam, and I can never forget, she was like, you got to bring more coffee. Just go out of this office, get to the other floors, go around and drink more coffee. And I will just never forget that tip. And it's like, and that was for me also the part of my emotional intelligence learning. So for me as well, it was like, you know, I was I was efficient. I was like, I need to get the job done. And I would, because I tend to be some think of a quick person, I sometimes want to get things done so quick that I rather do them myself than involve too many other people, because I get the feeling that it might be quicker. But sometimes, yeah, you also, you know, have that way. If you want to go fast, go alone. But if you want to go far, then you've got to go together, even though that might be sometimes slow down. So I had to learn that. And I see, I recognize that all around, we all somewhere have to learn it in the journey, and then we forget it, and then we have to relearn it. So also that back at that time, also in Philips, I remember one of my managers also telling me, like, you know, you're doing a lot, everything great, but you are lacking emotional intelligence. It's like, you know, you can be just so tough and skipping the emotions. And then funny enough, emotion is now a key part of everything that I do also with my clients. Mm. But I was one of those person where I thought, you know, sure, emotion is important, but at work, it's work. Like, you know, and then I realized that was also part of the questions that I had received. When like you get out of the door at 8 o'clock in the morning to go to school, whatever upset situation has happened at home, stays at home. You close the door, you almost close your heart, but it doesn't work. You know, then I learned it just doesn't work. It comes back to you in so many ways. And for me, that ways were also physical. I suffer of migraines a lot. I had so many physical problems if I look back at those times. So sure, I was producing, but then at least 2 days a month, I would be closing my bed with migraine that I could not even look at the light. And now I'm like, ever since I changed my ways, I'm like, I can't even remember anymore when is the last time I had one of those bad migraines. Mm. So you see, it comes back.
I'm curious with the book Yellow Goldfish, in its 9 ways to increase happiness in business to drive growth, productivity, and prosperity. And in there, happiness is an acronym. Mm-hmm. And the first S is simplicity, which I'm sure we'll talk about, because that's something that I'm hunting passionately now. But I'm curious, one of the pieces of advice that I've heard before, which I feel is wisdom about writing a book, is don't write a book for which you're an expert on. Write a book about something you want to become an expert on. So I'm curious, was this a part of your journey towards that emotional connection, or was that something that you had already achieved and you said, now I want to share that? So how did this all come together over time?
It was really a combination of. So what happened was, when I really want to, like, I knew, I truly believe that organizations have responsibility and the possibility of contributing to happiness. So, and that's where also in 2016, I did my TEDx talk about happiness-driven growth as this new life-enriching business model. But that was my belief. And I was like, I needed to prove it to the world. So at some point at the end of 2017, I thought, like, I need to start approaching this in a structural way, systemic way. I need to start looking for all the companies which are already doing something that contributes to happiness. And I need to check their business case and say, look, they're doing this and it's making them successful. It's making them win on the market because they're doing this. Mm. And at the very same time, Stan Phelps sent me an email asking me for examples of pink goldfish, because his way of doing all things goldfish were to crowdsource for examples. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I was familiar with the name Stan, and then I looked it back and I was like, oh my God, I had subscribed to his newsletters years before. Mm-hmm. But, like, you know, often when you see something very interesting, subscribe, and then, like, you don't really read it. And then suddenly I started to read everything. I was like, oh my God, this is so much aligned. And I saw his TEDx talk and I was like, okay, I've got to send him an email and say, hey, have you ever thought about doing, well, shouldn't you do yellow goldfish on happiness? And then his reaction was like, yeah, that's a great idea. And I was like, wow, okay. And that's how it started. And then that became also a learning journey. And for me, one of the biggest part of what you say, like, you write about what you want to become an expert on, what I didn't know and I learned while writing yellow goldfish was that the reason why I could so much see and notice and feel every single time companies were doing something that contributed to my happiness or to other people's happiness was that when that was happening, I was getting what I call a shot of dopamine. So I learned a lot, also much more about our biology and our brain and the chemicals of our brain, dopamine, oxytocin, serotonin, and endorphin. And in the middle of writing the book, I had a number of personal issues at home with my son. And basically, it turned out my son had ADHD and I had ADHD. And I learned that while writing Goldfish. And for me, it was also like, oh my God, I've been noticing all those things because they were giving me what I was lacking. In some cases, I was lacking dopamine. I was lacking serotonin because of the way that my brain is wired. And things, sometimes companies can do that and provide that to me. And that became also for me an extra validation of why companies play such a key role, both towards their own employees and towards the customer and society overall. And why also at mental health. So the first H of happiness is about health, which is the basic, but it's not only our physical health, it's also our mental health. And our mental health, it's a combination of the chemicals that we have. And if what we do, we can design experiences that by default help us get dopamine, oxytocin, serotonin, and endorphin in a natural way rather than through drugs. Yeah, why should we not do that?
Love it. I'm about to ask a question about your work. So how you help organizations and leaders achieve that. But I would like to take a little bit of time, because the yellow goldfish is, this is not a book you can just snack and put aside, meaning there is so much thought and care in here with tools and methods and anecdotes. How did you craft all this together? Because, you know, every chapter almost could have been a book on its own. You know, it's a beautiful piece of work. And I would really recommend people that to pick it up and carve out the time, because it's also, you know, super meaningful and valuable. What was the journey of writing this like for you?
It's funny that you asked that, because it's like, yeah, if I tell you like how long it actually took to write it, it's not much, like, it's like, it was, everything was here and everything was already somewhere else in my computer and in multiple places. Mm-hmm. And for me, one thing I always have, I need a deadline. If you give me a deadline, somehow it's like I can do anything almost. So the deadline was the 13th of August. I didn't remember the deadline was the 13th of August, because we needed to send it to the editor for review. And we've been collecting examples since November of 2017. So I put all those things together. There was a lot of content, but nothing, not much was really written yet. And then in July, I went for holidays, and I remember walking back on the beach, and all those thoughts were coming, and I was recording few things. And I came back home on the 3rd of August after all holidays. So I had 10 days. And in those 10 days, I still don't know how, but like I sit down every single morning at 7 a.m. And within 10 days, I wrote those 30 plus thousand words. And at the end, I was like, oh my God, now I have 30,000 words. That was supposed to be the entire book. So, you know, and that was only my part. So then that just happened. And then, of course, there was a lot of reviewing and editing and thing afterwards. But that was, to me, the journey. It was like, it was so much present already. Then putting it down was like, could just be done in a way.
Incredible. Yeah. Well, it feels like you said, it was all in your head from all these different experiences and education and things that you took. So lovely. So, and now you also, through your company, Wow Now, and people can find you at wownow.eu. What is it that you do there? You know, these are I think consulting projects that you work with large organizations to create value, you know, and bring happiness into the customer experience. How does that work? What does that look like for people?
So it really, the way that it started was like at the very beginning. So actually tomorrow is going to be on the 18th of December is going to be 7 years since I founded Well Now. And from the very beginning, I almost had 100% advisory. So it started with turning the Net Promoter Score data into insights, into action, into results. So that's really how it started, my first big client. The first part was helping them set up the NPS survey and the questions and the frameworks and the entire system within the company in the right way. The other part, which is also one of the parts that I truly love about that part of work, is I did most of the analysis myself. So it's like once all the data comes in and the comments comes in, that's the part where the researcher in me comes up. So I just love to read through all the comments. And ever since 2005, when for the first time, as a business improvement manager at Adobe, I was also using the voice of the customer to identify which projects to run and which actions to do. I've been using an adapted version of the Maslow hierarchy of needs, which is also a lot of what you find in the book, to really see what makes the difference for people. Why certain experiences make people happier and more fulfilled and satisfied, and they make them score a 10 versus some other experiences. So that analysis I always love to run, because it's where all those connections and also all my learnings about what drives us as human being comes together. And then it's about passing it on to people, helping them see that insight, and then get cross-functional teams together and say, okay, with this insight, what is that we need to do? And then that comes through type of design thinking, type of processes. So really brainstorming together, creating new solutions, voting on which one is most feasible and has the highest impact, and then putting into action. So at beginning, that's especially because I had big clients that became like full-time job. And then next to it, I start developing masterclasses. So I founded the CXPA in the Netherlands, and I brought the certification of the CXPA into the Netherlands. So developing the masterclasses, and that then masterclasses is keynotes started to become an additional path next to the advisory. Mm-hmm. And I try to balance off and say, okay, 70% advisory, 30% masterclasses and inspirational session. And if I look at this year, like it's almost like it's, then the balance started to change over the years. So it's now like more, I have to say 80%, 70% masterclasses in inspirational session and keynotes, and 20-30% advisory. And that's a bit how it's going now.
Cool. You mentioned CXPA, and that's the Customer Experience Professionals Association, if I remember the acronym. Yeah, probably 10 plus years ago, I was one of the original founding members of the International CXPA, and I've lost track a little bit. So can you give us a few words on CXPA and what that could mean for people here in the Netherlands or abroad?
Yeah, so like I looked from the side also in 2010. I know that was like for me a really critical year in my life because I became mother and actually at the time I lost my father. So I saw Bruce Temkin founding the CXPA and I was so excited about it. And I was like, oh, as soon as there will be brain space and energy space in my head, I will do something with this. And that indeed happened then a few years later. And I was like, okay, I need to bring it to the Netherlands. The CXPA is the first worldwide association really for customer experience professional. Why? Because while for every other type of role, marketing, business improvement, project management, there were already association standard certification, there wasn't anything back in 2010 worldwide which put together customer experience professional. So that was how Bruce Temkin, Johnny Bliss, you and a few other people really started together. In 2016, I decided to bring it to the Netherlands, also with the intention of bringing people together in an international community. So I've been on until last year. Then I also now have stepped out since a year because it became much more focused on the Dutch market. And for me, it was really like for them, it's now almost completely in Dutch as well. So it's definitely a lot of value for people in the Netherlands which work in the Dutch market. And for me, it was like, I really love the international element. Like one of the reasons from the very moment that I joined the Netherlands was I love the international feeling of it. I love that we can be in the same room now virtual. And like if there are 10 people, it's 9 different countries. That really makes me thrive. So then for me, when it became just Dutch focused, I was like, okay, that's not anymore for me. And now I'm part of the Design Thinkers Instead Association. And I'm always looking for new communities where it feels like it's more what I aligned with what I'm doing and my values as well. Yeah.
Right. Well, I think the CXPA internationally is incredibly meaningful. And so if people really want to lean in and get the certification, which is not only, you know, the knowledge part, but also the practical part. I'll put a link to that as well in the show notes. Yeah.
Good that you mentioned it because I mean, in international, I'm still linked to all of them and it's still an amazing community. So internationally, like you can join in from everywhere. And I have to say this year, especially 6 days, was just fantastic because it was all online. There were no frontiers anymore. So while indeed last year we did the Dutch one, actually at the hotel school, connecting also with Switzerland, but we could have one connection. Mm-hmm. Now it was just fully international. So we were connected from everywhere. Mm-hmm. And they provide a lot of value with tools and certification.
Great. I'm curious in your work when, you know, taking NPS, so it's data driven, obviously would be connecting to the brand, you know, because that's where customer experience work also comes, connecting to the humans, the people in the organization. I'm curious if you have and I'm just gonna put you on the spot a little bit, as a story where looking at the data, you came up with a profound change in the journey or the customer experience that created a lot of value for the customer and the company. Do you have a go-to story there or method or something?
I mean, like not on the top of my mind right now. So it's at the end, it's because especially in the last year, it's always been software related. So I'm trying to think, you're putting me on the spot of thinking of a good one right away.
Well, if it comes up, because what we spoke about before we started recording was simplicity, and maybe what that really triggered me on is oftentimes, in my experience, organizations put too much into the experience, and oftentimes value can be found by doing less. Curious if you agree with that, or if you've seen that succeed in practice.
Absolutely. That we see it all the time. It's not only doing less, but also keep it simple for the customer. And I'm thinking now also when it comes to the software. So one of the companies I work for, like they provide software for legal people, for lawyers to address cases. And that, for example, from MPS, what we saw is that how important for them is to be able to access that information in a simple, easy way. So even just the filter, it's something that for them is a lot of value. It's like it has to allow them to simply filter quickly. Or at some point there was something very, very basic, which was because many people were not using the Chrome application, but they were using a different browser, they could not just simply duplicate the tab. So I remember like something so, I would almost say banal as that one, where they were saying, you know, I need to be able to look at the documents in your database and the sentence on the other one, and I need to have it twice, but I cannot do that. And we were like, what do you mean you cannot have that? You can just click duplicate tab and you could have it side by side. And so like the most simple answer was just use Chrome as a browser where you can have duplicate tab with one click and you can do what you're saying you want to do. And they were like, oh my God, thank you. And I was like, really? I was like, so that would be like one simple thing. But that made a lot of difference in them just because it allowed them to do something that they really needed to do in like a quarter of a time.
I love that example. It you know, in technology and software land, which I'm very close to, is the mindset and the paradigm of the developer and the tester is oftentimes very different than the user. And then the humans that are making it make assumptions that, I know that you can have another tab in Chrome, where they don't even think that that is something that might be trained or highlighted or is actually valuable. And that's where that voice of the customer and interaction comes in to see. And I would imagine that was quite an insightful moment, because when you heard the complaint, then it could be that they start developing a new feature in the software to do that, when actually the most simple solution was just use Chrome. You know, so that was
definitely
an aha. So, Rosaria,
And the other one that comes into mind now, also it's from Aegon, which is actually also a lot in the book as well, where from MPS and also from doing something called the Customer Arena, they really learn the difference that they actually make in people's lives. And by using the voice of the customer and also reframing it and sharing it in a different way in the organization, they were really able to change the mindset from we are just a financial company to we are a life event company. Because people come to us when somebody dies, when they have an accident, when they need health coverage. So they always come to us in incredibly emotional moments. And that is also back where you cannot just keep the emotions out of the business, because we are human and we have emotions.
Coming back to the emotions again, and for me, this is maybe my last question, unless you have some other topics or questions. But and the question is that I like to ask is, who is your perfect customer? But let me make that more specific, because this is an area of CX and customer experience, and a statement I like to throw out in these types of conversations is, do you believe that an organization can make a meaningful change, a true change in their customer centricity and their customer experience without changing their leadership, meaning without changing their leadership into to somebody who gets it? Can you get somebody who doesn't get it to get it and then invest in it and do it meaningfully?
I think you can get somebody doesn't get it, but you cannot do it meaningfully unless that happens.
Mm.
So like you're really not to the core. It's like the leadership, it's absolutely, it's all about the leadership. It starts with the leadership. And so what we saw also in a lot of the Yellow Goldfish company is like it started with a very visionary leader at the top who enabled that change. There were also quite a few cases where it starts from the bottom up. So it was the people who led that change. That's also absolutely possible. But then you need to have a leader who is still willing, who gets it, to understand what is happening. So for me, when I look at my ideal clients, I'm saying now I really want, I started to talk a lot about feminine leadership. So I say I want to serve feminine leaders, which doesn't mean female leaders, but it means leaders with a feminine trait of also taking care of the emotion, of wanting to drive the happiness, of believing that we can make the world healthier, happier, and more sustainable, and that they are open to do it in a different way, that they believe, we talk also a lot about growth mindset in some of your other podcasts, that they really believe that we can grow as a people, and that that they are open to mistakes. They don't see a mistake as a failure, but they see mistakes as a chance to learn. Those are the type of people that I want to work with, but I can feel like, I can be sometimes even too much. Like sometimes I can be over enthusiastic and passionate. I'm like, I want to be accepted for who I am. That is my strength. And in something that's also like one of the Goldfish author, like Dave talks about a lot. I'm like, sure, sometimes that strength can also be a weakness, but I want to work with people who appreciate it as a strength.
Beautiful. And Stan Phelps of all the Goldfish, he's been wonderful to be on the podcast as well. And David Rendell, who you were just referring to with Pink Goldfish. And the Pink Goldfish is the next edition is coming out. So I'm delighted to be on the review group of that. Maybe you are as well. So it's a beautiful community of supportive people. So thank you so much. So sorry, Rosaria. Lovely. Thank you. We need to wrap up. I would like to just remind people that, the Yellow Goldfish is out there, packed with insights. Rosaria with her company, nowwow.eu. And I'll put that link to the website in the show notes, as well as her LinkedIn. And she's also busy on Instagram. So you can follow her activities there. And and I really hope if leaders who are, and I loved your description of that feminine, not necessarily female, inclusive, emotionally driven leader. If that is triggering for someone to learn more, then I really would celebrate them to reach out to you and see how you might be able to support each other. So Rosaria, thank you so much for joining. I've really appreciated this.
Thank you so much to you, Chris. And I could continue to talk for hours with you. So thank you.
Learn more at ebullient.com/podcast.